Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. This is the Molloy Program on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Wait a second. I don't think my headphones are working. Hello? Is this my... Oh, my God. Please don't let it be one of those nights. We have, as you may know, we only have a four-day work week this week. Yay! July 4th is Friday, so we will be away from the studio Friday and all next week. You didn't do that! Happy birthday, Mr. President. Yeah, it's my birthday. And thanks to everybody who sent birthday greetings. It was very sweet. Molly and Kathy and I had a delicious homemade chocolate cake when Molly came home from day camp. And it was fun. I'm at the age where you don't really celebrate birthdays. You're just real damn glad to see another one come by, you know. Whoa! I got another one! So anyway, we're going to be off Friday and all next week. Do you know what the schedule is going to be? All right, on Friday, the Vince Bugliosi interview will be replayed. And then
I know that during the week, next week, Sam Cedar and Johnny Wendell are going to be subbing for you. I don't have the exact days yet, though.
That'll make a lot of people happy and a lot of people pissed off. So, all right, well, that's cool. We had lunch today with a friend whose mountain house is being turned over to us for an entire week. Whew. Man, up in the North Carolina mountains. It is nice to have friends with mountain houses. I swear to God. The last caller last night was Len from New York, NYC. Len is a frequent caller of the program. I like talking with Len. He's an Orthodox Jew and has opinions on Israel that are, you know, some of them he and I would agree on. Others we would definitely disagree. But I always enjoy hearing from Len. And last night, excuse me. His point of view, the text of his phone call, was about an Israeli attack on Iran and why that might be a reality. And what Len mentioned was Israel's fears about Iran's nuclear capability and the possibility that Iran might attack the Jewish state. And if you were listening last night at the end of the show, we talked about that for a couple of minutes. But I got an email last night from Reg, who was listening. And the email came in too late for me to read over the air, so I'll share it with you now. Reggie writes, does anyone ask why any Muslim nation expresses hostility toward Israel? Just once, Reg writes, I want to hear someone talk about 40 years of military occupation and illegal settlements and checkpoints and humiliation and confiscated land and collective punishment. Just once, I want someone to suggest that there might be a legitimate anger out there and not anti-Semitic Nazis under every rock in the Middle East. No one asks, ever, except you, Reg. Yeah, that is... Reg put it into maybe 60, 70 words here, what I've been laboring to say for years. It's what Brother Dave Gardner said a generation ago. You can't beat people up and have them say, I love you. You just can't do that. You can't. And the distortions of the facts surrounding the establishment of the State of Israel have become fact. Even though anyone who reads and studies, as I have, about the original Jewish terrorist organizations who decided they had to end the British mandate, the British had to be driven out of Palestine by force, and they were, the invention, if you want to call it that, of the car bomb is an invention of the Irgun, or the Haganah, or the Stern Gang, probably the Stern Gang, one of the original Jewish terrorist organizations. Now, they're referred to in history as Jewish terrorist organizations, or Jewish liberation organizations, or Jewish organizations seeking a homeland. Take your pick. Take your pick. But is it any different from the lexicon applied to Palestinians? Well, of course not. So, great respect for Len, great respect for Reg, and Reg's point is exactly on the money. Just once, she said, I want someone to suggest that there might be a legitimate anger out there and not anti-Semitic Nazis under every rock in the Middle East. That's true. William in Hollywood writes, Mike, I was at our friendly freak show, Rite Aid Drugs, which I refer to as Fright Aid, getting out of my car just to get a few items like Cheerios on sale, and a Mexican fellow walks up and asked me if I had a quarter so he could get water. So I gave it to him. He didn't ask for a dollar, a quarter. Then this redneck, hulking freak strides over to me and said, why are you giving these people money? Don't you know that just encourages them to hang around? My response was, it really is none of your business what I do or why. Then he asked how much I gave the Mexican, and I replied, again, it's none of your business. Then I get the stare as some sort of threat, a long stare. I said, is there a problem? Do I have your permission now to close my door and go about my business, or is there more insanity you have to offer? He huffed away, calling me an a-hole. Oh, that really hurt. This is not the first time this sort of crap happened. No matter where I go, it makes me wonder just how blue this state, California, really is. I don't run across many understanding or forgiving people around here these days. Nothing at all what it used to be. I expect to run into these freaks in Orange County, or the foothills, where they've always been. You can now drive along, going a few blocks in one section of L.A. is Mexican. Then it's a complete change to Korean, then African-American, and then Scientologist freaks, then the Armenians, and none of them crossed the lines drawn. Reminds me of when I used to live in Chicago during the 50s and 60s with all the neighborhood borders. What is troubling is this is what their children see and learn. William. The Scientologists have their own neighborhood now, really? Oh, my God. Well, this is where the Armenians live. This is where the Slovenians live. This is mostly African-American. This over here is Italian. And here's where the Scientologists live. Have you been following the tomato scare, the great tomato scare of 2008? 800 and how many? Almost 900 people now sick from salmonella poisoning. And at this late stage, this was first reported when? In April? What is this? July? And nobody knows what's going on. Now they don't even know if it's really tomatoes, which has really, how do I put this, pissed off the tomato farming industry because they have been driven right into the muck, right? Now, we haven't stopped eating tomatoes here in the Malloy household, but on the other hand, you know, they're locally grown. And, you know, we feel pretty okay. They don't come from some place where they're washed in sewage or whatever it is. No, that would be E. coli. Yeah, this is salmonella. Is that music? Oh, okay. Well, I'll pick up this because I have an answer to the tomato problem, the salmonella outbreak. I know where it's coming from. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Thank you.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
Part of my birthday present from Kathy is lots of ABBA in the bumper music tonight, because Mamma Mia is premiering when July 8th, 18th. Can't wait to see it. Tomatoes, the investigation into whether it really has been tomatoes that have caused almost 900 people to get sick from salmonella is broadening instead of narrowing. Dr. David Acheson, Associate Commissioner for Food at the Food and Drug Administration, said today, now remember, he's part of the Bush crime family, he said, quote, the pace of this investigation has been frustratingly slow, end quote. Well, there's one person who could speed it up, and that's Dr. David Acheson. I love how the Republicans, especially the leading members of the Bush crime family, always make their statements condemning a certain action in the passive tense. Or would that be the subjunctive? Don't email me. The passive tense, as though there's some outside force determining how they run their organizations. And there is. It's Dick Cheney. It's George Bush. It is the agricultural industrial complex. It's whomever. But when this guy, Dr. David Acheson, says, well, the pace of this investigation has been frustratingly slow, it's because Dr. David Acheson, obviously, is a jerkwad. All he has to do is order it, speed it up. But no. Anyway, food safety officials, go ahead, laugh, with the FDA, go ahead, raucous laughter, and the Centers for Disease Control here in Atlanta said salmonella has left almost 900 people ill since April, and now the food safety officials, go ahead, laugh, in the Bush crime family have now said that while tomatoes remain the lead suspect, you like that? Tomatoes are the lead suspect. They aren't yet certain tomatoes are to blame for the illnesses. Now, meanwhile, the CEO of the Western Growers Association in Irvine, California, said today, this is a tomato man, he said, quote, before you can say it's an outbreak and stop eating tomatoes, there should be certain evidence that that's exactly true, and until that's done, they should reserve judgment, end quote. Not necessarily, and I'll explain that in a minute. Now, the crack FDA people first announced the salmonella illnesses months ago, and they centered their investigation on certain types of raw tomatoes. Since then, food safety inspectors have traveled to tomato farms in Mexico and Florida as the number of sick people continue to rise. But instead of honing in on what caused the illnesses, inspectors now say, I don't know. What? I don't know. What am I supposed to know? I'm a food inspector. You know what I did before this? I was a fundraiser for George Bush. They give me this job. I don't know from tomatoes. What's the what? Tomatoes. Okay. They're red things, you know. Texas has seen the most cases of salmonella. Texas is constantly being punished for George Bush. 300 people sick there. New Mexico and Illinois come in next. In the meantime, tomato farmers now say they want a congressional investigation because the tomato industry stands to lose hundreds of millions of dollars. Here's the answer for anyone that cares. This is obviously a Dick Cheney operation. There is no question. Just like the anthrax was a Cheney operation, this is a Cheney operation. And what it is kind of a kick in the groin. Well, it's two-pronged. First of all, a kick in the groin to the American public because he can kick us in the groin with poisoning our food. Secondly, it becomes a propaganda tool because eventually the fringe nuts on the internet start talking about, well, it looks like we've been attacked. It looks like we've been attacked. Oh, my God. Probably the most vulnerable part of this country is our food supply because nobody pays any attention to it. Homeland Security, Homeland Schminurity. Give me a break. Nobody pays attention to the security of this country. The Department of Homeland Security is a jobs program for, I don't know, for people who promise they'll vote Republican if they're given the job. It's a joke. It only people are getting sick. So far, nobody's died. Now, secondly, the great tomato scare of 2008, a Dick Cheney operation, also diverts attention and takes away news minutes from the evening news, where most people get their information, takes away news minutes for the oncoming, like a freight train, attack on Iran. So, problem solved. Poison tomatoes, Dick Cheney.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
If you see the wonder of a fairy tale, you can take the future.
Yeah, I was watching Entertainment Tonight tonight, and they had one of the reporters in Greece where the Mamma Mia was shot. And I'm sitting there watching this, Entertainment Tonight, and I'm thinking, damn, how fun would it be to just watch Entertainment Tonight and listen to ABBA music and watch Mary Hart and the rest of them cavorting and playing, and Meryl Streep and Pierce Brosnan and everybody, and the jumping around in the Aegean Sea, and you know, and then making a trip. You can get over to Greece pretty cheaply. Just make a trip, go, hang out, jump in the water, eat lots of seafood, eat olives, you know, and think about that rather than, well. So we decided on some ABBA tonight. Barack Obama is taking his move to the center, don't you think, just a little bit too far? Come on. Yesterday, he was giving a speech on patriotism. That was his theme, patriotism. And he a major speech, one that will be quoted and used in Barack Obama Democratic Party commercials. Major speech on patriotism. And in the speech, he went after or criticized MoveOn.org, which endorsed him in the Democratic presidential race. He criticized MoveOn.org for referring to General David Petraeus as General Betray Us last year. He said, Barack Obama said, politics too often seems, quote, trapped in old threadbare arguments, end quote, that he called, quote, caricatures of left and right, end quote. Well, I'll be damned. Really? Obama added that this, quote, was most evident during our recent debates about the war in Iraq when those who opposed administration policy were tagged by some as unpatriotic and a general providing the best counsel on how to move forward in Iraq was accused of betrayal, end quote. So apparently now in Obama world, every tit equals a tat. Every this equals a that. Every left equals a right. And every lie equals a truth. Really? Well, I'll be damned. I didn't know that that's what Obama's positions got down to. Now, Obama, of course, did not vote last year when the Senate approved a measure condemning the Move On ad, possibly because Move On had just or was planning to endorse him? No. Mr. Clean wouldn't do that, would he? Obama also said he would never question the patriotism of others in this campaign. Let me see. I guess that'd be John McCain. And he made clear, however, that he would, quote, not stand idly by when I hear others question mine, end quote. Well, you know, you do get some points here, Senator Obama, from this humble and obedient talk show host for at least digging in your heels and telling the right-wingers that you will bitch slap back for every time they take a swing at you. Well, good for you on that one. But is MoveOn.org in its criticism of General David Petraeus and the Bush crime family really equal in their divisiveness as the Bush crime family and Cheney and Petraeus are in their lies and murderous actions in Iraq? Does Barack Obama not know that we were taken to war in Iraq based on a series of horrendous lies? He does know that, right? Okay. If he does know that, then how would MoveOn.org wind up being a caricature of the left? How does that happen? It's very troubling, isn't it? Isn't all this very troubling about Barack Obama? I'm upset. I really am. I'm upset. And the other thing from Obama world today, might as well get it out now, Al from Payson, Arizona, which, according to Al, is a town of 50 churches, says, "Hi, Mike. So Obama is going to expand the office of faith-based initiatives." That's like saying he's going to expand the office of nonsense-based initiatives. "Please convince me not to vote for Nader. What the hell is going on with these people?" I love you, man. Al from Payson, Arizona. What Al is referring to, of course, is Obama's speech today on... what was the topic today? Faith? I don't know. I guess it was faith. Gregory wrote in, "Mike, I am extremely liberal. I'm for gay marriage. I am an atheist. I can't stand Bush or the military. I stand against the NRA, against conservatism, etc. I am more of a European at heart. I would be happiest in the UK, France, or Spain. With all that being said, I can't stand this first woman president, first black president crap. I know Hillary is conservative light, and I'm beginning to wonder if the Obama fist bump will be the only real change in Washington once he wins. Hell, it might get worse. If we are attacked again, he will outdo Bush to prove he is up to Whitey's ruthlessness. I will vote for him and will wait until he's in power to see if he steers back toward the left lane. Currently is moving to the right, and maybe that's what you do to win. But he better move left once he's inaugurated. Check out what I just found on the net." And then what Greg is very upset about is this Obama's apparent dedication to faith-based programs. In other words, Christian activism to take the place of government-sponsored programs to reduce poverty, handle drug and alcohol abuse, homelessness, right? I love the way the Associated Press reports that, taking a page from President Bush, Democrat Barack Obama said today he wants to expand White House efforts to steer social service dollars to religious groups. Expand White House efforts. So he's going to out-Bush Bush on this one. Obama contends he is merely stating his long-held positions. Surprising to some, he said, after a primary campaign in which he was, quote, tagged as being on the left, end quote. Now, the other night, I fessed up to this. I said Barack Obama was a blank slate. He had great rhetoric. You know, the idea of hope and change. You know, the two key words in selling you something is new and improved. The two key words in advertising techniques is repetition and irritation. But new and improved works every time, always works. So Barack Obama is now saying that during the primary campaign, he was, quote, tagged as being on the left, end quote. What does that mean when he says that? Does that mean, ha-ha, gotcha, I'm not on the left? Or does it mean I was tagged as being on the left and that's really where I am, but I'm lying through my teeth about all these issues, whether it's FISA or faith-based initiatives or whatever you want to call it? I'm just pretending because I want to suck in the white Reagan Democrats, Bush Republicans. I want to get them in. I've got a plan. My plan is to wipe out the Republican Party. I'm going to stand up here and pretend to be a centrist with a drift to the right. Get all these dumbass Republicans to vote for me and vote Democratic as they go down ticket, and that's it. Then we tie up the Republican Party, put it in a plastic bag, attach cement blocks to it, and drop it off a pier in Brooklyn. Is that the plan? Or is Barack Obama just being Barack Obama? Now, he claims that, hey, this is really me. This is really me. How did I get tagged as being on the left? I'm not on the left. God damn, folks. I'm not on the left at all. You know, I believe in capital punishment, and I think everybody should have a gun, and wiretapping your phone is, you know, it's okay, given the circumstances. And, you know, excusing unlawful behavior, criminal activity by corporations. Yo, hey, that's, you know, here, let me give you a fist bump. The winner takes it all. The loser standing small. Beside the victory, that's her destiny. I was in your arms, thinking I belong.
What's wrong? You're in shame by your own sorrow.
And Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
There is no hope for tomorrow. How I hate to see you like this. There is no way you can deny.
It's about 9 before the hour. Going out in the last break, ABBA got all twisted. Sorry for that. Coming up a little bit later in the program, a new feature, Bridget Speaks. And hopefully a moment with Bob. And again, program note will be off Friday and all next week. This Friday, if you want to hear the interview with Vince Bugliosi, it'll be the replayed program Friday night. So Barack Obama is having a series of speeches around the country leading into Friday's 4th of July holiday. And his campaign says it's aimed at reassuring skeptical voters and shifting away from being stamped as part of the Democratic Party's most liberal wing. Oh, damn. Really? How come Republicans never shift away from being identified as part of the Republican Party's most conservative wing? Why do Republicans embrace conservatism even though it's a suicide pact? And when Democrats are asked to embrace liberalism, which created them, they run like scared bunnies. What is that? I'll tell you what it is. You and I both know the word liberal has been turned into a curse word by stalwart, upstanding, red, white, and blue Americans like the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, and his many clones. But it's astonishing to me. Someone whose basic philosophy seems to be that of a progressive, if the word liberal makes you wet your pants, a progressive Democrat. He talks progressivism as he works his way through the primaries. And what does he get for that? While Hillary Clinton is drawing 1,500 people, he draws 40,000 people. While John McCain draws hundreds and hundreds of dullard, head-bobbing freaks in bib overhauls, Barack Obama entertains 60,000 people. So, is the reward to these tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who have responded to his charisma, who have responded to his slightly left approach to the political scene during the primary season, is the reward what it usually is? A kick in the groin, a smack across the face. Why is Barack Obama going after the conservative vote? Screw them. They are dead. They are corpses, and they want to kill everything. They want to pollute everything. Why is he going after them? Barack, Senator, please. 80% of the country hates the son of a bitch in the White House. What are you doing? What is he doing? What is Barack Obama doing? The screaming crowds, the reaching out. Oh, change. Really? Where's the change? Where, Senator, now is the change you talked about for the past 16 months? All of a sudden, it's evaporating like spring rain. It's gone. Now you are sounding like an articulate Republican, which for the most part is a contradiction in terms, but somehow you've put that together. And if that's who you are, if that's who you are, if your change is simply the change that will come about from having, as the emailer said earlier tonight, the first African-American president, if that's what you're talking about in terms of change, I don't particularly give a damn about that. I really don't. I mean, I think it's an historical event. Of course, it's an historical event. But I'm not interested in history. I'm interested in seeing leadership in this country from the solid democratic liberal left, because nothing else is going to save us. Nothing. Whether that left is the Democratic Party, the Socialist Party, the Communist Party, whatever it turns out to be, Senator, It's about the only arrow left in the quiver. Don't you understand that? You're a history teacher, University of, by God, Chicago. Woo! That's more impressive than Harvard or Yale. University of Chicago. Jesus, God, where the bomb was developed. I mean, University of Chicago. So you're obviously a bright, brilliant 47-year-old man. Why are you betraying us? Us being liberal Democrats who rolled the dice, like, wow, man, this guy is not as far left as I am, not as liberal as I am, but he's, you know, saying the right words, he's doing the right things. Is it a plan? Is it something that you and your advisors have cooked up? Like I said earlier, is this a plan to once and for all annihilate, destroy, bury the Republican Party? If it is, okay. After the inauguration, I will say I'm sorry for my loss of faith back in July. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Well, you people are merciless. Got an email here from David, who's a German, Latin, and Italian teacher in Carbondale, Illinois, who has something to say about my use of the term. Why do Republicans always talk in the passive voice? He writes, "Hey, Mike, it's present, past, and future tense. It's active or passive voice. It's indicative or subjunctive mood. Will your listeners give you no peace at all?" And then, interestingly, he uses German, Latin, Italian, and English to say, "Keep it lit." Thanks, David. I had to learn all that from a Latin teacher about tense voice and mood. So somebody else sent me an email, too, that said it's... I don't know. Al Martin, writing at almartinraw.com. We used to have him on a lot. He was the author of, what was the Iran-Contra book? Remember that, Kathy?
The Conspirators.
The Conspirators. The
Secrets of an Iran-Contra Insider.
Insider, right. Yeah, it was a couple of years ago, more than a couple, about 5 years ago. We used to have Al on at least once a week. I don't know how we lost contact with him. But he points out today at his website about how working class Republicans have been the greatest victims of so-called Bushonomics. And I personally hope that working class Republicans are completely aware of how they have slashed, mutilated, cut their own bodies repeatedly. They are cutters. And about the only satisfaction they get out of life, apparently, is in continuing to hack away at their own flesh, at their savings, at their children, at everything that you would think one would not hack away at if one were interested in not just self-preservation, but self-growth. But not Republicans. As Al points out, they have on a percentage basis seen the greatest numbers of their jobs exported under the Bushonian U.S. Jobs Export Program. They have seen their real wages, net income minus inflation and taxation, lag behind the most of any group. Proportionately, they have suffered the highest number of foreclosures on their homes. They have also suffered the highest number of repossessions on their loans for autos, motorcycles, boats, RVs, etc. On a prorated basis, they have also suffered the highest delinquency and default rates in credit cards and home finance lines of credit. Al doesn't stop there. He loads it on. He says, also, the investments traditionally held by working-class Republicans, like municipal bond funds, have lost as much as 50% of their value in the last 6 months. Working-class Republicans also have been the greatest victims through the loss of their pension plans and health insurance. In other words, Bushonomics is a continuous trickle-up of wealth, and working-class Republicans have done more than their fair share in making Bushonomics work. It's not difficult to fault the working-class Republicans because of their own stupidity. It is willful stupidity. I have not been able to figure this out. If any working-class Republican would ever take a look at the historical record of the working class in this country, whether you're Democrat or Republican, independent is immaterial, you will find, working-class Republican, that you and yours did the best under a Democratic administration. Always. The only reason the Republicans came to power at all is because they played on your elemental, visceral, reptilian fear. They turned you into a bunch of goddamn cowards. They made you afraid of your own shadow. That's what they did. And then they took away from you everything that you thought was yours. It's gone. Including your dignity and your self-respect. What an amazing, cowardly subset of the population, Republicans. Al says, the idea of voting for Republicans is so deeply ingrained within the heads of these people because they still haven't realized how fractured the Republican Party has become, and that there are wings in the Republican Party. This is something that most working-class Republicans are unaware of, and so they will just vote Republican because it says Republican. Just like Mr. Frank's book, What's the Matter with Kansas? I don't get you people. I really don't. So now you have a Republican light, like you had with Clinton. I know a lot of you became Clinton Republicans, but then you stomped on your own appendage when you handed Bill Clinton a Republican Congress. What the hell is wrong with you people? Well, maybe it's simply because you listen to Barack Obama and you realize, or you listen to Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton or most Republicans, and you think to yourselves, well, I may be a dumbass, but I'm smart enough to hear that they are Republican light. What the hell? If I'm going to vote Republican, might as well vote for a real one. John McCain. Yes, sir. George Bush. Ronald Reagan. And you may be right. No offense. I just think you all are about the stupidest subset of people ever to infest my country. George Bush, Jesus H. Christ, you voted for him twice? You did. You voted for him and Cheney a second time?
They have wrapped every single cord they can get their hands on around your necks. They're choking you to death. And you're going to vote Republican again, aren't you? Huh? Yes, sir. You're going to vote for John McCain because you know why? Because John McCain has this vast international experience. Yes, he does. Foreign policy is his strong suit. Who are we fighting in Iraq again, my friends? Senator Lieberman, who are we fighting? Who? Really? Oh, damn. You're going to vote again. You're going to vote for this Republican fool again, aren't you? You're going to do it to yourself and your family and your grandchildren. You're going to do it again, aren't you? Why? Why? You know, I've had an ongoing challenge for, 7 years now? Any Republican who can call this program, who can maintain a civil tongue, who can point out one single piece of legislation or directive or whatever the hell passes for law in this country any longer that the Republicans or Bush have put together that benefits the majority of the people in this country, I would like to hear it. And it's a safe bet, if you will, because there is nothing that the Republicans have given this country worth a damn. The Republicans have given this country to corporate America. But you're going to vote Republican again, aren't you? Huh? Aren't you? Of course you are. And the reason you're going to vote Republican again, it's because, frankly, you're just terminally, willfully stupid. Do we have some music? Hello, de-do-de-do. We're coming up to a break. I know, I will sing music. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. There's music! We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
De partir n'importe où.
What?
Bras dessus, bras dessous. En j'entends des chansons. C'est si bon de se dire des mots doux. De petits rien.
It's 21 past the hour. Here's an email from Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. Two things about Obama's latest pronouncements on the faith-based initiative programs. By now, it's fairly apparent, especially from remarks by David Kuo, the deputy director of Bush's program, that it was a political scam designed to buy votes and to maintain a pipeline between Bush, the fundamentalists in the White House, and the religious right. Does that sound like a foundation upon which to expand? If Obama had said, "I'm going to completely reform the system which Bush corrupted," I might have felt a bit better about spending federal tax dollars on religiously based programs, although I still disagree with it on constitutional principles. The second bothersome item isn't being widely reported, and that's what Obama said about further protecting the right of such groups to hire and fire on the basis of faith, meaning no gay employees, while receiving government funds. For someone with experience in constitutional law, that's unconscionable. Michael in Roswell. Yeah. Faith-based initiatives are and were designed to be a scam. Absolutely a scam. And one that is particularly egregious because it is funded either by the Chinese or by our tax dollars. I'm an atheist. I don't want a dime going
to someone who will take homeless people or hungry people and force feed them some religious nonsense before they're given a meal. If you're a Jew, why would you want someone to listen to a bunch of Christian mythology about Christ before they get a meal? If you're a Hindu, well, you get my point. So when Barack Obama stands up and proudly announces he will expand a program whose deputy director said a couple of years ago was an absolute political scam, what does that say to you, Obama supporters? Does it say anything? Or are you still writing on that blank slate? It's a disappointment. The last couple of weeks for me, watching what Barack Obama is doing, listening to what he is saying, noticing the people he has surrounded himself with, starting to understand, now that he has the nomination, some of his positions that are based, obviously, on his philosophy. And when he condemns MoveOn.org for telling the truth and puts them on a balance scale with the lies and deceptions of the Bush crime family and General Petraeus, then you either pay attention to that or you send me an email that says something to the effect, Mike, you son of a bitch, you have really sunk to the lowest possible level. I hate you and I will never listen to you again. You are dissing Barack Obama. Which is pretty much the same thing that the Hillary supporters said in their emails to me back during the primary season. All I can say to people who adopt that attitude is goodbye, good luck, hope things work out. We'll miss your presence. I'm exhausted already. Ray 2 writes, hey Mike, 27 countries have curtailed food exports, reluctant to trade food security for worthless dollars. They are instead increasing food reserves. Meanwhile, back in the USA, exports remain strong despite record low grain reserves and an approaching dismal harvest. Yesterday's U.S. Department of Agriculture report forecasts an 8% drop in the grain harvest, and that can only be described as an unreasonably rosy outlook. Their own numbers show corn acreage down 9%, and with late planting and weeks of cold, wet weather, yields would be down dramatically. And remember, reserves were already at record lows. The U.S. has no intention of halting exports soon as prices continue to climb. This does make money for major corporations. You and I, not so much. Grain prices are already running four times what they were before the Bush crime family and the four horses of the apocalypse took the reins of government. Chucklenuts keeps telling us food prices are going up because the emerging middle class in China and India are demanding a better diet. But China and India have been net exporters of both grain and meat for the past 10 years. They have a surplus. I'll make you a believer. Meanwhile, incomes are stagnant or going down. Bush may have failed at everything else, but he does seem to have a handle on wage inflation. Welcome to the peanut butter economy.
Deliver, you know I'm a forgiver. Reach out and touch faith. Reach out and touch faith. Your own personal Jesus. Someone to hear your prayers, someone who cares. Your own person.
26 before the hour. And now, Bridget Speaks. Hi, Mike. I wandered into my office early this morning with a cup of Super Beans coffee. Picked a sleeping cat off my chair and sat down to stroke her for a few moments. They're right. Stroking a cat definitely lowers blood pressure. I'd spent the first half hour or so of being awake this morning reading email and news in bed from my iPhone. Yeah, I'm a complete news junkie and don't feel like it's safe to get out of bed, especially living on the West Coast, until I know what kind of craziness the world has already created for the day, which is just beginning for me. I discovered that there is still a huge brouhaha around Wes Clark's comment on Sunday on Face the Nation. In reading reader responses to various articles, I was struck hard, right across the forehead, about how detached from objective reality we have become in this country. Wesley Clark's huge sin was to point out, and I quote, quote, "I don't think riding in a fighter plane and getting shot down is a qualification to be president," end quote. Well, it's about time someone said that one out loud. But what does General Clark get for speaking the obvious? How dare he impugn McCain's patriotism? Even Obama's tepid response is about patriotism. And here's where my head spins round like a possessed creature from The Exorcist. Who said anything about patriotism? Before the comment we've continually heard quoted, Clark talked about honoring McCain's service, that McCain was a hero to, quote, me and to hundreds of thousands and millions of others in armed forces as a prisoner of war, end quote. Now, I'm not surprised that the right wing and the fawning news media would howl in outrage that someone would speak such basic truths about their maverick hero. That's just par for the course. What I am surprised by are the numbers of people who apparently heard the statement that didn't exist. I don't care how many ways you read Clark's comments, there is no way, if you actually hear or read them, to find anything negative about McCain's patriotism. Now, I could go on for hours about what I think patriotism means or what it consists of, but that's for another day. A hint? I don't think it has anything to do with flag lapel pins. What is crucial to me, what this is a glowing example of, is how deep in fantasy and our own creation of so-called reality many people live. We can shake our heads in disbelief that there are still people who believe we did find weapons in Iraq or that Saddam was behind 9/11. But that is, to some extent, understandable because of the disinformation put out by the administration and perpetuated by the news media. Asleep on the job. It is the sad truth about the human psyche that once we accept something as truth, it's very difficult to change that perception. I'm very afraid that that is what has happened over the last 30, maybe 40 years. The gradual erosion of our capacity to question authority and to think critically. We are inundated with ad campaigns that are pure fiction, so-called reality shows that have as much reality as a science fiction novel, politicians that say whatever they think we want to hear and never even blink, government officials who lie under oath, talk show hosts who pull so-called facts out of body orifices. The list is endless. I think we've stopped being able to hear. We're too busy listening to what we're told we've heard. As concerned as I am about getting our country back, I think I'm more concerned about recovering the freedom of our minds and our capacity to discern. I may choose to view certain things through a lens that, because of my life experience, includes a belief in the existence of a mystical other world, but I know that I am making that choice. What do we have to do to get people to understand that what we choose to listen to or watch or read affects the lens through which we perceive? If I listen to Fox or Limbaugh as my main source of information, I will see information one way. If I listen to you, I will see it another. But if I invest the time and energy to check information out as best I can, to listen to congressional hearings or read documents, or even take 5 minutes to Google Clark's comments on Face the Nation and read them, I have a chance of perceiving events through a slightly clearer lens. I can hear the roar of, "I don't have time!" And I understand that most of us spend long hours just trying to hold our lives together these days. Tom Hartman did something interesting on his show today. He read sections of the Declaration of Independence, and then he read from his book, What Would Jefferson Do? What happened to the 56 signers of that declaration we celebrate every Independence Day? Each one of them, by affixing their signature to that document, put their lives in jeopardy. Some of them were imprisoned, beaten, tortured. Many were financially wiped out because they had to go into hiding, and all their worldly goods were seized. Their families were imprisoned, their children lost, their lives forever changed. They had no illusions about the dangers. They signed anyway. That's what I would call patriotism. There's a story about Ben Franklin being stopped by a woman as he emerged from the drafting of the Constitution years later. The woman asked him, "What kind of government have we created?" Franklin answered, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it." We haven't done a very good job of keeping it in recent years. We have too often stopped seeing our country through the lens of our Constitution. So we hear rubbish like, "This is a Christian nation," and we quickly put our hands over our hearts to pledge to a flag under God. Perhaps this July 4th, between the hot dogs and the fireworks, we could read the Declaration of Independence aloud to whomever will listen, to whomever is open to choosing that reality through which to see our country. Bridget. Oh, and by the way, Bridget Wolf, the author, and her artist husband, John Crawford, do some amazing things. This is the website Fairy Woodland, fairywoodland.com, fairywoodland.com. Check it out. Check it out. Fairywoodland.com. It's an amazing website, and what they have to offer there is... Well, let me just say that I have two of their pieces. Three, actually. But go to fairywoodland.com and check it out. Amazing. All right, where are we? Is it time for a break? No, it is not time for a break. Oh, one last thing here for this hour. And then it might be a good idea to take some phone calls. What do you think, Kathy? Should we do phone calls? Anybody on hold? Anybody? Oh my God. All right, let's do that right now. Stephen is calling from Front Royal, Virginia, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Stephen.
Hey, Mike. HB, buddy. HB.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Turn off my
speakerphone
there.
Yeah, that's good.
How's the arm?
The arm's fine. Still itchy and a nice knot where the varmint got me, but other than that, everything's okay.
Good. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I wanted to talk to you about Barack Obama. I would never presume to argue with you, Mike. I just want to lay it out for you. Mike, I'm 42 years old. I've never known a Bobby Kennedy. I do know a Dennis Kucinich. I consider myself a Dennis Kucinich Democrat.
Uh-huh.
Mike Revelle, whatever. Ron Paul, all these guys, they're talking about the Constitution. But here's the thing, Mike. With Barack, it's like, he's 47, I'm 42, man, I'm getting old. Wow, I mean, I can't believe he's only 5 years older than me. And it's like this, Mike, when the guy talks, when he speaks, it's like, when I hear him speak, it's like flowers start falling out of the sky. It's raining flowers or out of the ceiling of wherever I'm standing.
Yeah.
Everything starts getting all creamy, man. And what happens is I listen to your show. I'm a longtime listener of you.
Uh-huh.
You really know how to kick my ass. And it's like, I hate to put it in that way, but that's what you're doing. It's like you stand there with a staff of truth, okay? And things start getting real creamy, and then you hit me across the shoulders with that staff of truth. FISA bill, or,
I'm sorry.
You know, what Clark said, what he said about what Clark said about McCain. And it's like, every time I get, and it's like, oh, yeah, and then I wake up a little bit, and I'm like, okay, yeah, right, Mike, right. And that's why I listen to you, because you're able to do that. And I'm not kissing your ass, man, but I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah.
I wish you many more happy birthdays, Mike. And our country needs you, somebody like you, to really keep us awake, because I mean, it seems like he could say, he could grow vampire teeth that are bloody and say, I'm going to drink the blood of Iraqi children with Cheney and Bush. And I would be like, okay. And then you're like, what did he just say? You hit me with that. And it's like, what did he just say? And it's like, oh, yeah, what did he just say? And, Mike, I hope the Joe Sixpack thing that he's you're basically saying he's trying to get the Joe Sixpack vote by saying all this stuff. I hope that that is the case. But then you're like, but maybe that's not it. And, you know, you're right. And so you kind of got my head spinning. The whole thing has got my head spinning.
Well, me too. You know, there who was it that said there are no absolute answers? They're just a series of more and more and more questions.
It seems so complicated.
Yeah, it's like those Russian stacking dolls. You know, you take them apart and there's another one. Take it apart, there's another one. Take it apart, there's another one. I've been listening very closely to Barack Obama for 16 months, and like you, you know, I've had that serious spin this way and then that way and then this way and then that way. But I appreciate what you had to say. Thanks, Stephen. Got to leave it there. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hold your family name. You got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Ten before the hour. Back to your phone calls here in this segment. Paula. Paula is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey, listening on the internet. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Mike. First of all, on behalf of myself and my friends on the Democratic Underground Truth Seeker Thread, happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
And secondly, regarding this faith-based initiative nonsense, that has me steaming my latest outrage. I think what bothers me more than the fact that our tax dollars are going to religious organizations is the fact that isn't it just basically buying a box of Band-Aids to cure problems that need real solutions?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Where our tax, you know, it's just like, yeah, they're giving people meals and temporary shelter, but they're not doing anything. Addressing the causes of homelessness and poverty.
There's no job training. There's no educational grants or scholarships. It is give the poor sucker a warm place to sleep and a bowl of soup and a sermon about Jesus, and everything will be okay. Everything will not be okay. You're absolutely right. It's a scam. The guy who ran it said it was a scam. David Kuo. Who is a very religious man, but he said this is nonsense.
And it's just ridiculous. And yes, it's our tax dollars funding it, which bothers me even more. Why don't we like focus that money? Like, and how about funding, let's say, affordable housing building projects?
There's an idea.
How about job training programs? How about funding small businesses to get people who wouldn't otherwise be able to start a business to start a business? How about drug treatment centers? And we can save money by decriminalizing drugs.
The list
people
is
out of jail and, you know, close down the DEA. How much money would that save?
The list is endless, isn't it, Paula?
Oh, it's just insane.
But no. Let's expand a program that is a joke, a myth, and a scam, so-called faith-based. That term irritates the hell out of me anyway, because it's not faith-based, it's fear-based, it's religion-based, but it's not faith-based. I hate the way language has been thrown into some kind of a blender and come out all topsy-turvy. But yeah, you're right. Why not have comprehensive programs that attack the root cause of the stuff rather than give somebody a ham sandwich and a bowl of bean soup?
And three Hail Marys and an Our Father here and there. And what bothers me about, and this move to the center thing, what bothers me is that Republicans never moderate their language. They never moderate their message. Mm-hmm. They never make a move to the left.
No.
I mean, and look who their base is. I mean, we're talking about people who think the dinosaurs went extinct because they were too big to fit on Noah's Ark. They can, you know what I mean? They don't have to change from that.
Yeah.
They can still be that crazy, but
sure.
Obama has to change his message to appeal to people like, and it makes no sense.
Well, that's the part that leaves me completely nonplussed, Paul, because, again, after presenting himself obliquely, but still presenting himself as, for those of us who chose to identify him as a liberal kind of guy, a liberal Democrat maybe, or at least a left-leaning Democrat, now he is pursuing votes that he probably will never get, and those are the votes of these working class Republicans who are hell bent on destroying their own lives. I mean, they have repeatedly, going all the way back to Reagan, they continue to vote for a political party that sees them as chumps, fools, play toys, and people to scare the bejesus out of to get their votes. And I don't know why Obama is going after those people. They'll turn on him like snakes.
Oh, they will. And the thing is, he didn't have to, Mike, because he did, and he wasn't my candidate, but he did something that nobody else on the Democratic side had done, which is appeal to people who were disengaged, who weren't engaged, who'd never participated.
There you go.
He got people who weren't voting to register.
Right.
That's what Democrats have to do.
Right.
And he was doing it, so there was no need for this.
So now that he gets hundreds of thousands of new registered voters, if not millions, now he's going to stand up there and say, well, FISA's not such a bad idea.
And you know what? What's going to happen between now and November? They're going to get discouraged.
And maybe stay home. Or
maybe stay home.
Go to the polls and vote for... Nader pops into mind, but, you know, who knows? Who
or
knows?
Cynthia McKinney.
Cynthia McKinney pops into mind.
You know, it's just so unnecessary, and it's so disappointing, and it just drives me up a wall. They never seem to learn. You know what? And again, it's, again, my theory that Democratic consultants are nothing but RNC moles.
Are nothing but what?
Moles from the
RNC. From the Republican Party? Yeah,
because they do this all the time. It's like every election year the same thing happens.
I know.
And then they all blame, they didn't go right enough.
Yeah, and what is a workable definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and over again?
And expecting different results.
A different outcome, right. Paula, thank you.
No problem. Like, again, happy birthday.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care. We have a break coming up here, so... we shall hold off on your phone calls until after the break. Oh, next hour, I believe we're going to have a moment with Bob. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. And again, program notes, we will not be doing the program Friday evening, the 4th of July. We will be at a fireworks display. I love fireworks. And then all next week, we will be gone. We being Kathy, Molly, and me. Substituting will be, who is it, Kathy? Johnny Wendell on Monday. Sam Cedar on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Well, Johnny Wendell, of course, from KTLK, and Sam Cedar, like me, late of, and Randy Rhodes, and just about everybody, late of Air America. You all know Sam. We will be back on this program Monday, the 14th of July. Back to your phone calls. Marge! Marge is calling from Indiana. Oh, my God. Happy 4th of July, Marge.
Darling, you are growing older. Silver threads among the gold.
Oh, my God. That song is from way before I was born. I guess back when you were a teenager, right?
Oh, you smart. I won't finish that. I will be nice.
Thank you, Marge.
But anyway, you know, I did not know that Tom Hartman read from the Declaration today. I was going to put in a request that you do a reading since the 4th of July is coming up. You know, I did read it myself today,
yeah.
And there are remarkable similarities between our separation from King George and today's goings-on.
Isn't that the truth?
Also with another George. Have you read it lately?
Didn't we read it, Kathy, on this program not so very long ago? Was it just the preamble to the Declaration of Independence?
When in the course of human events?
Yeah, I think it was I went through the whole thing. As a matter of fact, it's not that long. I went through the list of crimes committed against the colonists by the Crown of England. Not so long ago.
I did mark one little sentence here. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant, is unfit to be the ruler of free people.
Hear, hear.
And I thought, gee.
Off with his head.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You know, the GOP, which I don't know, it's not original, but the Grand Oil Party, they do wonderful things with words.
They do.
This is not mine. I can't claim it. But do you know what interrogation enhancement is?
What is it?
Torture.
Oh, yeah, well, yes. Of course I knew that. Of course, I thought, never mind. The corruption of language, though, is a necessary major step in the ending of freedom and the establishment of tyranny.
You remember Uncle Ron's one that he coined was revenue enhancement.
Revenue enhancement, yeah.
Isn't that lovely?
Right.
And I don't know who read it, but they were talking about somebody who was going was being charged for the bombing of the USS Cole,
right.
And it wasn't a journalist type voice. It was sounded more like a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
And the, one of the first charges he listed, and I sat there with my mouth open: conspiracy to violate the laws of war. You know the first thing that came into my mind when I heard that?
What?
You remember Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid?
Yeah.
The scene where, before we have this fight, we got to establish the rules for this night fight.
Right.
Jeez, Mary and Joseph, I swear to God, these people.
I know.
Are absolutely out of their cotton to the mind.
Well, it speaks volumes about the human condition that we have something called the Geneva Conventions and the rules of warfare. You know, the purpose of warfare is to blow things up and kill people.
Uh-huh.
And there has to be rules as to how we do that, I guess, how we handle civilian populations. Whenever I hear talk about that, I'm reminding of the firebombing of Dresden during World War II and the nuclear annihilation of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I just think to myself, gosh, I guess that's what you do in war. You kill so many of the, quote, enemies, and unquote, people that they immediately sue for peace. But to have rules of war is just one more example of insanity.
Yeah. That is so bizarre. I can't find a word to describe it. But laws of war, you know, I thought what's the expression, all fair in love and war?
Mm-hmm.
Well, geez, we sure as hell aren't getting loved. not in that vernacular, anyway.
That is the truth.
But, I mean, you know, they're blowing things up. And the one thing that just blew my mind was last Saturday in my local paper was the Associated Press article that said we are paying I couldn't find it when I sat down at the phone, retail prices for the oil that we use for our trucks and vehicles in Iraq. Don't you just love it?
Oh, well, that's because the services to our military are handled by private contractors.
Yeah, it's been outsourced.
Oh, sure. Sure. And if there's one thing that private contractors are going to do in a time of war is make lots and lots and lots of money. And the money that they don't earn by cheating the U.S. soldier and the American taxpayer, they will just, in broad daylight, steal. And this is why they should, the entire board of directors of Halliburton and or Kellogg, Brown & Root should be given a fair trial, and if found guilty, taken out and shot.
Yeah, well, there's one answer that I haven't heard. I remember when the discovery was made, and that was rather early on. I don't know, was in the first few months or, you know, when the war started, or I don't remember exactly when, but some GIs happened across this castle, building, whatever, you know, modest establishment, and they came, it was billions of dollars in chests.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, in U.S. currency, do you remember that?
Oh, I do, I do.
What the hell ever happened to that?
Does anybody know? Stacked on pallets. It was used to pay off anybody and everybody because this is one of the ways that capitalism...
He
probably got his hands on some of it, but this is one of the ways that capitalism fights its wars, because who wants to die for capitalism? So you have to use bribery, chicanery, trickery, lies, deceit, all sorts of things in order to make capitalism work. So, yeah.
They keep talking about free trade. And they keep talking about leadership. Give me a damn bloody break, would you please? How about fair trade? How about honesty?
Yeah.
How's that for a leadership quality?
You're way too radical for me tonight.
Oh,
Mitch.
Hell. Sorry about that. Well, you're going up in the mountains. You going to go hunting and fishing?
Just fishing.
Oh, okay.
They don't feel anything when you kill them.
Oh, yeah, right. You know, I never could picture myself with a gun and killing things. And I thought, well, maybe I could go fishing.
Yeah.
And if they had one of these ponds at the local shopping center one time, and I thought, well, okay, Rick was little, I took him over, and we were going to see if we could catch a trout or whatever they had in the pond. And somebody caught a fish, and I saw it bleeding, and I thought, well, that does that.
That's the end of your fishing career. All right. Marge, behave yourself on the 4th of July. Don't blow.
Yeah, you too. I'm going to stay home and watch CBS with the concert and fireworks from Boston, with the Boston Pops. And
that's
no mosquitoes.
That's always a good one to watch. All right, Marge, take care.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Marge. As far as language, you know, a corrupted language and the way the Republicans have managed to manipulate it, I have a word. You all know this if you're regular listeners. And this is how I'm starting to feel about Barack Obama. And the word is antisappointment. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Where I let the row have done, I say hoeing ain't no fun. I ain't got no ambition on fishing by a shady, weighty pool, gone fishing. Out of work and out of school, I don't want to be annoyed by Reagan or by Freud, gone fishing. Instead of just a wishing.
End Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. I'm begging you
to stay. 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Bruce is calling from California, listening via the internet.
Happy
hey, Bruce.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. And that's all I'm not going to do anymore.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Bruce. Thank you.
Yeah, I was laughing with Ian because he said on the that on the computer screen he wrote Hitler equals Obama or the other way around.
Uh-huh.
And I had to laugh. I said, that'll get him to answer my call. It's not quite that serious. I was going to bring up the point that great orators throughout history don't necessarily make great leaders.
That's very true.
And there have been some wonderful ones. And you got to think about, look at Jim Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he talked 900 people into drinking the Kool-Aid and killing themselves. So, I mean, the guy must have been an incredible, incredibly convincing person.
Well, also you have to consider to whom he was speaking.
Well, that's true, too. I mean, you know, he was chosen by God or whatever, you know. But
well, what about the group, the Comet cult that all the... committed
example.
Suicide so that their freed spiritual essence could jump on the comet.
Right on in the comet, yeah.
Yeah, right.
But I just, you know, that was really the only point that I wanted to make was that it just seems to me that being a great orator, and Obama, there is no doubt the man is a brilliant orator.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can't take that away from him, just as you can't say that McCain is anything other than a
dullard.
Absolute
dull, colorless cipher. I mean, he's probably he reminds me a bit of Dwight Eisenhower on Quaaludes or something. I mean, there's just no there.
It's
just so dull. And as far as Barack Obama is concerned, you know, I'm in a period right now where I am just absolutely shocked, pissed off, and disappointed about what Barack has done over the past 2 weeks. Now, he may, you know, I hope I'm completely wrong. I hope this is a ploy. I mentioned this earlier tonight. If the objective here is to appeal to so many of the middle class or working class Republicans, if that's what Obama is trying to do, if politics is all deception, every single bit of it is deception. One only hopes that the means eventually justify the ends. But if Obama is working a scam on people to sink the Republican Party by getting so many people to vote for him and then vote for Democrats down the ticket this November, if that's the plan and Barack Obama is in fact a liberal Democrat, brilliant move. Now, I haven't seen that before in U.S. presidential politics, but so, you know, I realize this is a straw in the wind, but I'm hoping maybe that's the case. But what I'm going through right now, I think it's what a lot of traditional liberal Democrats are going through, and that is this horrible sense of betrayal once again.
Well, I think he's the only choice we've got, unfortunately. I mean, quite frankly, there is no other choice, so we have to give him a try. You know, I see exactly the point you're making. I mean, I don't dispute it at all, and I see him shifting to the right all the time, and I always wondered myself why it is that the right-wingers can go to the far extreme.
Right.
But even if you're just a little bit liberal, oh, my God, you know, it's the end of the world.
I don't know why liberalism or progressivism, which has given America everything that it has that has been positive, Republicans or conservatives have never provided anything positive or all-encompassing to Americans. So based on that simple truth, I don't understand why so many Americans refuse to acknowledge that simple truth and continue to vote against absolutely their own best interest on every single level. It is mass hysteria. It is some sort of a hallucinatory drug, apparently, that's gotten into the water supply. It's something that, to me, is not explainable. Not explainable.
I agree with you.
Why people, especially working-class Republicans or middle-class Republicans, continue to cut their own throats. I don't and never will get that. Hey, listen, thanks, Bruce. Got to move on.
Appreciate you checking in.
All right. Take care. That is absolutely beyond me. Just beyond me. I mean, if somebody really believes in conservative politics, why not vote Libertarian? I don't know. It's just, it's one of those dark, non-understandable paradigms. I'm an American. I'm struggling. I hate myself. I'm going to vote Republican. Jesus, God. When we come back after this break, A Moment with Bob. Stick around. I'm Mike Mueller. This is Nova M Radio.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Mueller.
Once again, it's time for A Moment with Bob. Hey, Mike. Now that we've established that the primary cause of the destruction of our country and the rest of the planet is unregulated capitalism on steroids, where psychopathic corporations pollute the air, water, and the dirt beneath our feet, where the food and water we depend upon for our existence has been poisoned by the mega conglomerates who claim that their rights take precedence over human beings, where the political process has become so corrupted that the majority of our elected representatives are simply paid shills for corporate interests, where the final arbiters of our rule of law, the Supreme Court, are not exempt from this corruption by corporations, where wars are fought not to defend the country and its citizens, but to increase the profits of the military-industrial energy corporate complex, and where corporate-controlled media fulfills its obligation to their owners by never reporting accurately on any of the above. I may have jumped the gun a little bit here because I don't think we've actually established that yet. So, for brevity's sake, here's everything I know about capitalism in less than 100 words. Capitalism is an economic system in which the means of production and distribution are privately or corporately owned. As a profit-driven system, it values profits over the labor that produces the profits. Capitalism starts wars, destroys people and the environment, and stomps all over the world in search of cheaper labor and new markets to capture. The capitalism model of infinite growth is ultimately unsustainable, in that the resources needed to maintain the system are finite. It is conceptually silly and disastrous in practice. Now, we could tweak that definition all day and still not satisfy everybody, but I'm happy with it, so let's move on. Depending on where you live, capitalism is a dandy little system. Americans represent 5% of the world's population and consume about 30% of the world's material resources and 26% of the world's energy. The main problem with capitalism, besides the fact that it ultimately doesn't work, is that it is so damn seductive. Other countries want to live like we do. It doesn't take too long to figure out that if the rest of the world lived like we do, we'd need more resources than the world possesses. And unless we're all set to colonize other planets, it looks like there's going to be some serious losers in this zero-sum game we're all playing. and when we should try to figure out how best to share and share alike, to be flexible in the face of reality, there's always some selfish blowhard that screws everything up. Many feel the so-called American way of life is an entitlement that operates outside the laws of nature. At the Earth Summit in 1992, George Herbert Walker Bush forcefully declared, "The American way of life is not negotiable." With that statement as a starting point, we cannot help but fail. But are any of our political leaders saying anything different? Or is it understood that it would be political suicide to tell Americans that the American way of life doesn't work? Is there a politician out there somewhere who isn't hooked into the death cult of capitalism? I reluctantly placed my trust in Barack Obama, but over the last week or so, he's been selling himself out as fast as he can before a fair price has even been agreed upon. What did I expect? He's a politician, you know. I almost completely agree with George Carlin, who said, "Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about, politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck. Or where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities. And they are elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. Term limits ain't going to do any good. You're just going to end up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So, maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here, like the public. Yeah, the public sucks. There's a nice campaign slogan for somebody. The public sucks!" He ended by saying something you can't say on the radio. Imagine that. Paraphrasing, he said, "Screw hope!" That's what I don't agree with, his last two words, because there is hope. We know that Americans fought and won concessions from capitalism and the government it controls. We organized. We organized and demanded fair wages and decent hours. Women organized and demanded the right to vote. African Americans organized and demanded civil rights. We organized, demanded, held strikes, boycotted, and won. That's what Americans did. And that's how it worked for most of the last century. And the only way it won't work now is if we deny that we are not like those Americans. For some reason, the DNA in our bodies has changed, and we are not the same kind of people our parents and our grandparents were. For some reason, we can't imagine turning off the television and organizing a movement made up of our friends, families, and neighbors. Maybe the only thing that has changed is that we may have forgotten how to begin. If that's the case, then everybody can go out and buy this book, Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky. In 1971, Saul Alinsky wrote an entertaining classic on grassroots organizing called Rules for Radicals. For Alinsky, organizing is the process of highlighting what is wrong and convincing people they can actually do something about it. This book tells the so-called have-nots, you know, us, how they can organize to achieve real political power for the practice of true democracy. Isn't it about time that we acknowledge that the situation we are now in will not stay the same? It won't get better by itself. It will only get worse unless we do something. Because if we don't, every single crappy science fiction story ever written about the future will come true. And who the hell wants their kids to grow up in a Charlton Heston movie? Soylent Green rations are up. Regards, Bob. And thus ends another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at the Nova M Widget Company. Soylent Green. Oh, my God. I remember that movie. Charlton Heston movie. Wasn't that the last movie that Edward G. Robinson performed in? Which leads me back to what I said Monday. If you're looking for an excellent movie to go see, you could even take your kid, your little kid. We took Molly. It's from Pixar Studios, this new one, WALL-E. There are two levels of this movie. There is the Pixar computer animated level that the kids like, and then there is the message that is right in your face from the moment the movie begins until the moment the movie ends 90-some minutes later. And the message that is in your face is one that especially Democrats or liberals or progressives will get right away. So if, don't let the fact that it's a Pixar movie keep you away. You know, computer animation, oh man, I hate it. I liked it back in the 40s when the real animators worked. No. Go see this. WALL-E. Where were we? Oh, yes. We're doing a talk show. Lee is calling from San Diego, listening on the internet. Hey, Lee.
Hey, what was the name of that movie again?
WALL-E.
WALL-E. Okay.
Yeah. WALL-E.
Yeah, I did kind of tune it out when you started saying Pixar. Okay.
Don't.
Okay.
Really, don't do it. Because I went reluctantly, too. I asked Kathy, what? We're going to go see a 95-minute
exactly.
cartoon?
Exactly.
Oh, Jesus. But I'm telling you, go see it.
Okay, cool. So McCain's in Latin America and South America.
How many votes is he going to get down there?
That's what I was thinking. And well, maybe while he's there, he's going to go see a... Hugo Chavez, you think?
I don't think.
Yeah, well, we could always hope. But
I guess that's to, what's the word? I love this word.
He wants to present his international side.
Right, he wants to burnish his international credentials. I've spent time overseas, but I wouldn't make any claim whatsoever to being an expert on anything, certainly not Latin America. Oh, my God.
Well, he's going to do a couple photo ops coming out of a plane, and but he's going to be practicing his teleprompter speeches.
Well, I wonder what countries he plans on visiting other than Colombia, because most of the countries now are liberal left struggling democracies or
yes, exactly,
and who do not like
Colombia. He'll go to Colombia.
Well, that's probably, and then Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably it. That will be his Latin American excursion.
The piece you read before. One thing I think a point needs to be made is, yeah, we are like, we did make gains years and years ago, and a great standard of living is what we achieved and so many wonderful things, but people need to realize, the American people need to realize that our wages are 70 in the 70s, back in the 70s. Our wages have not gone up. That's why people are hurting. That's why people can't make ends meet. It's not because we're complete doofuses. It's that the corporations have been getting these profits through the decades.
Right.
And anybody who brings that up is shouted down as a class warfarist.
Oh, sure.
And so people need to realize they're working hard and they're trying. And the reason is that these old, old wages.
Well, that's even more reason to me, Lee, for the so-called working class, which arguably includes all of us who get a paycheck of any sort. We don't make our money from investments or on interest. We work for it. All the more reason why the working class should be in the streets, should never vote Republican, should become vocal, demanding, threatening, to the point where the United States government trembles in terror at the potential of 125 million people saying, no, goddammit, I've had enough. You're right. 1970s wages is completely the result of the exploitation of human beings by the corporations. Completely and totally. There's no wiggle room there. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, there's a shadow hanging over me. I'm not half the man I used to be. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go.
Left out? Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
It's about 7 before the hour. Thanks to our engineer, Ian Huff, our technical director, Billy Foster, our podcast manager, Ben Birch, the resident philosopher of, okay, that's enough, the resident philosopher, Bob Alexander, our writer-in-residence, Bridget Wolf, and our military affairs correspondent, who is on vacation this week, Sharon Gordy. And the executive producer of this program, Catherine Bay. Back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, interesting you bring up Obama and the religious faith-based initiative.
Uh-huh.
Because there's a, I hear there's a new reality show out there that's going to have McCain, Hillary, and Obama, and it's called My Three Religious Freaks. But, yeah, I'm sick and tired of these politicians always telling everybody how they love God and God loves them right back. God does exist. I kind of doubt it. But, yeah, I personally don't like Obama, and I think he's a phony. But I can see, you know, why there's an appeal there, why people would like him and have hope and all that. When it comes to this idiot John McCain, when free trade has been shown as to be as big a disaster as it is, it's just a continuation of a 27 and a half years of Reaganomics. I don't really know who John McCain really does appeal to, and if he does appeal to anybody, I don't know why he would have any appeal.
I don't either.
Well, he told the. The good folks in Michigan, he told them, your factory jobs are gone, and they're not coming back. I mean, this John McCain, I mean, he's a great guy. I can see why people would want to vote for him. I mean, he's the kind of guy who wants to deny benefits for veterans. I think that experience in Vietnam made him bitter towards the human race. I think that's his problem. He figures, you know, if I had to go through something like that, that to hell with everyone else. Nobody's ever had to, had to go through what I had to go through. So, everybody else has to suffer. So what?
Well, aside from that, and you may be right about that. I've toyed with that idea a little bit where it concerns McCain. But aside from that, is also the fact that by any definition, John McCain is a dullard. He is not a leader. He has displayed his cowardice in front of the Bush crime family. You know, back in South Carolina in the 2000 primary, McCain went into as leading George W. Bush, and the ass whipping that the Karl Rove machine gave him and his reaction to it was stunning to me. This guy is no more of a war hero than I'm the Pope. He is a coward. He is a whipped dog. If Karl Rove can reach inside John McCain's throat, grab him by the inside of his ass, and pull him inside out the way he did in South Carolina, imagine what Ahmadinejad can do to him. But you see, McCain's answer is to bomb everything. So, no, McCain, to me, it would be the worst, absolute worst possible choice to be the leadership of anything. But you will see working class Republicans who will salivate over him, who will vote for him, who will sigh and clutch their flag lapel pins and say, yeah, but he's a Republican. Joe, I got to leave it there. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, but he's a Republican. He may be a half-wit and a coward and a skunk and a dullard, but he's our half-wit and skunk and dullard. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Take care. Really, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.